The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I want to continue on this series of talks that I've been doing. Those of you who weren't here, a couple of weeks ago I talked about the practice of two people meeting. And it's a profound thing to have two people meet and know each other and really encounter each other in a deep and close way. And that one of the things that Buddhist practice can allow is sometimes the deepest kind of connection two people can have is when they can meet with a kind of freedom of mind, freedom of heart that can come from meditation or practice. And so then I thought, following that talk, I would talk more about the practices that support this kind of meeting of two people encountering. And so last week I talked about solitude and how important solitude is, that to be comfortable in oneself, comfortable being alone, even when you're with people, that the capacity to be in a certain kind of healthy way, have a certain kind of solitude, allows the meeting of two people. If we're codependent and merge kind of codependently with people, there can't be any real meeting of two beautiful people. And so, and it's a whole training in itself to learn how to feel at peace in solitude, to feel deeply in rest in one's solitude. And you know, that is cultivated many ways. And then today, I'm going to talk about listening. The skill in listening is an important skill to develop and have. And that in order to really be able to connect with someone, we have to be able to listen well. And then next week, I'll talk about speaking and the role of speaking and the way people meet. And listening. Listening is something some people do a lot. Growing up, you did a lot of listening in schools, and or a lot of not listening, as it was. And listening is a profound thing. In the Theravada tradition, in our tradition, the disciples of the Buddha, the immediate disciples of him, the people who knew the Buddha, were called the listeners, the hearers. The word is savaka. And you see in the discourses it says, you know, the disciples of the Buddha, the word that's used for disciples is the listeners, those who really heard. There's a kind of a cliche, that maybe it goes back to ancient times, the Greeks, I think. It says that God gave us two ears and one mouth, so that we can listen twice as much as we speak. And that's a kind of nice rule of thumb, except for Dharma teachers. And some people point out that this connection to listening to spiritual life is also somehow pointed out in the rules of Saint Benedict. Because the rules of St. Benedict begin with the word ascolta, which is Latin for listen. I don't know the rest of it, but hopefully was listen something well, but ascolta, listen. And then also people say that the word obey or obedience apparently means to, in Latin, to listen well, or listen thoroughly, listen completely. So to listen. But listening is different than hearing. So listening and hearing are things that allow us to hear and encounter someone else. Listening also is what allows us to create community when a group of people come together. If you don't listen to people, it's very hard to hear community. Listening and hearing are also wonderful metaphors for mindfulness practice itself. And as we learn something more about the skill of listening and the qualities of listening, those translate to being able to practice mindfulness better, be able to meditate better, because some of the same capacities or approaches are needed. So hearing is an interesting sense door, because you can't as easily close your ears as you can close your eyes. And you can avert your gaze in order not to pay attention to something. But it's a little bit harder to avert your hearing to someone. You can. But, hearing kind of is kind of unidirectional. Hearing kind of goes in all directions. Hearing doesn't, we usually don't think of hearing interfering with what is being heard. Whereas with seeing, we sometimes say we see with rose-colored glasses. We see with a certain kind of bias or filters that we see things with. I don't know if it's true, but perhaps seeing is for some people a much more active sense than hearing itself. And as we begin to interfere with it more, there's more conceptualization that goes on with the act of seeing. But hearing, there's something about things can come to our ears, and there are some meditators who will do listening meditation instead of following the breath, because sometimes they follow. Some people, when they follow the breath in meditation or do anything that turns themselves inwards, the various self-conscious tendencies come into gear. So they'll start controlling their breath or start judging what's there, judging themselves in some way. But when they open the mindfulness, just hear the sounds around us. Some people find that since you can't control the sounds around you in the same way as you can control your breath, the sense of being the one who controls falls away and becomes much more relaxing. Some people find it easier not to judge sounds than it is to not judge themselves. And so by just staying in the present moment with sounds and listening allows them to kind of learn to be present or relax in the present moment in a more peaceful way. And it's a beautiful thing to be deeply relaxed, at peace, alert, and to allow sounds just arise and pass. One of the ways that sometimes instructed to listen to Dharma talks is you don't listen to Dharma talk, you hear it. And you hear it with your body rather than your mind. And you just kind of listen, and as if you're completely open, like the wind going through an open window. And you stay very present. So you can't let your mind drift off. And then whatever you need to hear will kind of settle where it needs to settle in you. And if you don't need it, it'll keep going right through you. I've listened to Dharma talks that way, and it's a beautiful thing to listen that way. Though sometimes I used to listen to my Zen teachers this way, and I would get very concentrated. Sometimes I got more concentrated listening to Dharma talks than I got my own meditation. The problem for me, though, was that it seldom landed anywhere. So at the end of the talk, I couldn't remember anything that was said. So then there's listening. To listen well. There's a story from the Indian epic called the Ramayana, which is told in our circle sometimes, of Rama, the god Rama, is out in the forest with his entourage, with his people. And they're walking through the forest, and Rama starts hearing something, and he can't quite make it out. And he asks his companions, "Do you hear any voice?" Anything? "No, no, we don't hear anything." And he gets really quiet and he listens. "I hear something, Don't you hear it?" "No, no, I don't hear it." And then finally very faintly hears his name being spoken out, Rama, Rama, very faint. And so he decides to kind of move towards the sound. So he kind of goes in the direction the sound is coming. And he moves closer and closer, gets louder and louder. And finally he comes to this big boulder. And it sounds like it's coming out of the boulder. And he hears his name, Rama, coming out of the boulder. So he put, in a very gentle way, he places both of his hands on the big boulder. And when he does, the boulder breaks open. And inside, there's a woman named Alaya. In this story, a beautiful woman. And she says that she was... placed inside the boulder, or she was petrified, only by a curse, by some witch or something. And the only way she could be freed, if someone came along and placed their loving hands on the boulder. And so she called out Rama's name, and Rama came. So it's kind of a metaphor, beautiful kind of metaphor, the story, because the name of the woman is Alaya in the story. And Alaya in Sanskrit means home. So who's calling Rama? Home is calling Rama. And what is the, and what kind of voice, how loud is home calling you? The metaphorical home or spiritual home or the inner home. And it's, it doesn't call you very loudly. And if you listen to your companions and ask them if they hear it, they say no. They'll say there is no sound. There's no home. There's no, nothing's calling you. Come with us and let's go out drinking. You know, you should go to school and get a degree. You should do this and that. There's, you know, they don't, no one hears that sound. But then in spite of your companions, you listen to this very faint voice, this faint calling. What is it that's calling us? This, I think it's a beautiful, another kind of related to it, listening, beautiful English expression to have a calling. Something calls us. Come, come. So Elias, you know, home, here, here, you, you. And then finding something that's petrified. And some people find things that are petrified. I remember, for me, I don't know if exactly petrified, but when I was about 16, I was in a boarding school in a beautiful mountainous area. And I was out walking with an older boy. Maybe I was younger, 15 maybe. I must have been 15. And the friend who was 17. And it was this beautiful, beautiful blue sky, and we see the valley below, and I kind of looked at it all, and nature and all, and I said, you know, what are we here for? You know, so I can imagine a 15-year-old, like, first time kind of like occurred to me, like, wow, what is life? What are we here for? And my older friend who I looked up to said to me, don't be foolish. And I could feel that door that I just opened just closed. I wasn't going to show that door to anyone. I wasn't going to open that door to anyone again. Petrified, closed. So it took a long time before that door opened up again. So is there something that's petrified or frozen or simply not listened to inside of you? And what does it take to listen? And then we finally come to it and then we put our loving hands on it. And this idea of our loving hands is beautiful as well. So many people that I talk to are hard on themselves, very critical. There's not much love that is deep inside. And to not meet ourselves with criticism or hostility, but meet ourselves with care and kindness, meet that parts of ourselves which are frozen or difficult with kindness, is what allows something deep inside to speak so we can hear it. So, to listen to ourselves, to listen to others. There are, nowadays in different settings, they teach skills in listening called listening skills. And you can go and Google the category listening skills and you'll find different places that give all kinds of different lists of skills. And what's, I think, interesting about some of these lists is that the skills that many of these, some of these skills that they give, there's some that are just for academic sites, like what you do in your school, like, you know, keep good notes or something. But the more psychological or psychotherapeutic, I don't know what, or life skill kind of approaches to listening skills, the things they list are exactly the same things you need for meditation practice. And some of these, sometimes they're called, it's called active listening. And that's one of the differences between hearing and listening. Hearing is passive. Listening involves some intention to hear, some directionality to listen. If you want to tell someone to listen to a sound far away, you say, listen. And they turn their hearing to listen, to hear something in a kind of directional way. So there's an active listening. Same thing with attention. We always have attentive. You can say you're paying attention all the time. But to have active attention, a certain kind of active attention is what's needed in meditation. And so active listening is to engage with interest in listening to somebody. So if you're listening to some other person, to be interested in the person and actively listen. And one of the important things that's needed for active listening is the ability to put aside your distractions, just like you need in meditation. If your mind wanders off into thought and you're not really hearing, then you're not actively listening. Or you might be half listening. And a humbling statistics is that people only remember 25 to 50% of what they hear after 10 minutes. And so I wonder how many of you remember what I just said in the last 20 minutes. Or I remember. So the, because you know, people are not so actively listening, interested. And so you see that in meditation, how easily the mind wanders off in distractions. I've seen it in conversations with people. It's quite kind of embarrassing to notice that occasionally it's happened to me that I realize I don't know what they said for the last minute. Because I was off, I went off on some tangent, I was off somewhere. Sometimes if I had a... it happens very, very occasionally, don't worry about it, but it happens very occasionally. It happens very occasionally, I notice, when I have... I can have a whole series of meetings with like what's called interviews or practice discussion with people, like 15 minutes, you know, sometimes like I have 8, 9, 10 of them in a row. And people come with, you know, the fullness of their life sometimes. It's quite full what they bring. And it gets kind of intense, you know, to listen to them. And so then they leave and someone else comes in. And then, you know, I'm supposed to listen to the next person with as fresh ears as I can, which I try, that's my practice to do that. But sometimes it's so, you know, such a big impact emotionally on me and what just happened that sometimes I find myself going back to the conversation you just had. And I haven't quite been able to let go of it. I'm still kind of living in it, processing what happened. And I didn't, I just kind of didn't hear what that person said. And if that does happen, usually I say, you know, could you say that again? And then I get it. People don't seem to mind. So active listening is to take interest in someone, what they're saying, but it also means being able to put aside your distractions. One of the distractions is planning what you're going to say. And as if what you have to say is important. Another distraction is to judge what and to judge or evaluate what's being said. Active listening involves really listening to what's being said so that you're not being pulled into your thoughts. There's plenty of time for your thoughts later, but you really take in all the information that's coming towards you. The information through the content of what they say, and the tone of their voice, and their gestures, their mannerism, their posture. You have to kind of give it person your full attention, be able to put your usual self-conscious concerns aside. And for most people, that's, unless it's grippingly interesting, for most people that's a skill that needs to be learned, or it's a capacity that we need to be actively working on in order to keep a high quality attention when we're listening to someone. There's a story of a man who went to a priest and said, I think actually the story was told, it was a rabbi, and said, you know, I have trouble with my wife. And he described the trouble, whatever it was, I don't know. And the rabbi said, oh, well, you have to go home and listen to her. So he said, okay. So he went home and listened to her. And then then he came back a few weeks later to the rabbi and said, it didn't help. And I listened to what you had to say. And then the rabbi said, don't listen to what she's saying. Listen to what she's not saying. There's a lot that's not being said. There's a lot that gets said between the lines. There's a lot of there's a lot to listen to besides the words. And if you react to the words, you might miss the depth of what's going on in that person. You might miss their home that's somehow trying to come out. It's a beautiful gift to offer our listening to someone else. It's sometimes in therapy, in some therapy circles, They say that most of the healing that can happen in therapy comes from therapists listening. Or in pastoral counseling, especially, even more so than therapy. Pastoral counseling with someone like a pastor listens to someone. And spiritual direction, spiritual counseling. A lot of it is just listening. And people hear themselves when they get to speak, and to be able to do that to someone who really is interested and pulls them out and asks good questions, and you know, just the fact that someone's interested. It's like alchemy that happens. I've experienced it myself, where I've been the recipient of someone's really good listening skills, and you can feel the alchemy inside. I can feel myself saying things, I can hear myself saying things, maybe that I've never said before to anyone, even to myself. Or I've said it to myself, I've thought it, but I haven't really owned it. But when I actually say it to someone else, then I really own it, and really say, oh, that's how it is. Oh, I guess I can't, I have to take this seriously now that I've said it. And there's a whole kind of change that happens inside when you actually speak it and someone receives it fully. If someone receives it and then gives you advice, then it doesn't allow the alchemy to work as well. So to give the gift of listening, and part of that act of listening sometimes is then asking questions or indicating that you've heard. So for some of you know Carl Rogers, who was this great American therapist, who apparently had nothing to say at all, except to repeat back what he heard. And even then, sometimes he didn't even do that. He just nodded and said yes. And people were transformed in his presence because of this active listening, that the active kind of people felt like someone cared. Some of you know about Avalokiteshvara, which is the great bodhisattva of compassion, the great embodiment of compassion, the kind of deity-like figure in Buddhism's archetype of compassion. And in India it was called Avalokiteshvara, in China was Kuan Yin, in Japan is Kannon, and thereby... and sometimes she said to be the one who sees the suffering of the world, and therefore when they chose a name for the camera Canon in Japan, they named it after the great bodhisattva of compassion, the one who sees the suffering of the world. Isn't that nice? Some of you might have a Canon. That's what Canon means, the god of compassion, who sees well. But sometimes this bodhisattva is also described not the one who sees the suffering of the world, but the one who hears the suffering of the world. So it's a compassionate thing to listen and to hear deeply. So now I've done all this talking about listening, carrying on a great monologue here. So now it's my turn to listen to you. And I'd like to hear from you of what you've learned about how to listen. What have some of you learned in your lifetime? Some of you, I hope you've learned something about listening. What have you learned about listening or the value of listening? It's in the back of the room.
Yeah, I think for me, it's taken a long time to learn is what I've heard in active listening is deal with the emotion first. That if somebody is in distress or somebody is, you know, either angry or sad, that they have to deal with that. They're in that struggle, and the emotion has to come out first before their logic can start going. So rather than, as you mentioned, jumping in and trying to offer a solution, all that emotion has to come out and the pulse has to come down. And then after that, then the healing or the solution can be addressed.
So as a listener, you're not just listening to the words, but you're listening to the emotion that's behind the words. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's actually more important to the whole conversation than what they're actually saying.
Yeah, and then if they feel understood or they can feel that you're connected with them, that you understand mm-hmm. that emotion, mm-hmm. then... yeah, the healing can begin.
Beautiful, thank you. So it's what the rabbi said, listen to what she's not saying.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I have a kind of a visual idea of what listening is. And to me, it's like memory foam, you know, that stuff that pillows or mattresses are made out of. You lay on it and an impression of your head or body is taken by the foam. Well, I think that's what listening is like. Just really receiving an impression. And so sometimes I don't want to speak because it seems like a privilege to have that effect on some. So that's what I think listening is.
Great, thank you. So it's a privilege to be heard.
Well, what I've learned about listening lately is that it's probably more important than talking at times, or at least for me, because normally when I'm listening, I'm only half listening because half the time I'm thinking about my rebuttal or what I'm going to say next in regards to what they're saying, and I realize that that's pretty arrogant of me, and, you know, going off Buddhist teachings is that by listening, by, you know, creating that concentration to focus and listen, at the end of whatever they're saying, I'm actually able to acquire much greater wisdom and have something a lot, you know, a lot better to say than I would have if I actually thought about it, and it would have been instantaneous. And I've also learned that, you know, to really be engaged, it's like what you were saying, is you have to see the person, notice their gestures, you know, see the body language so you could get 100% of the message, not just the words, because they say that, you know, 80% of what you're actually transmitting of the message is actually being said through your body language, through your emotions. And the last thing that I've learned in my communications class is actually noticing or having, you know, being able to notice the invisible compliment is what they call it, which is, you know, just as an example, the invisible compliment could be you talked without, you know, touching your water. So in some ways it's supposed to make you feel good about that aspect that you probably didn't notice yourself, and it shows how much I was actually paying attention to you. And in doing so, it gives you that much more confidence to be able to speak the next time. So that's kind of what I've learned about listening lately.
Great, beautiful. Thank you. Okay.
It's rather remarkable. It's the first time I've been here, and about listening. It's the first time in decades that I've heard the name Carl Rogers. And when I was in graduate school, I had 5 years of therapy from a therapist who worked directly under Carl Rogers. And that's one of the most transformative things that have ever happened to me. And I never got any advice, except for at the very end. He said, be very clear about what you want. In 5 years, So that's it.
Thank you. And did you learn how to be your own Carl Rogers?
Sometimes. It was really great to remember. I learned how to trust my own. The thing about it is, a Rogerian therapist really trusts the process. And I learned to trust myself.
Beautiful. I think this is what we're trying to also do with mindfulness. In a sense, be our own Rogerian therapists. Just to listen and trust the process if you're present and pay attention carefully to what's going on. Yes, Matt.
I've learned recently is that and it really shows up in my therapy sessions, like I go in with this agenda, like all these things that I want to bring up. And I find myself kind of cutting off my therapist and not listening that well and just always, I have all these things I want to say and I just need to get them out, I need to heal, you know? And I just find myself just cutting them off and not listening and just till the final minute of our therapy session just talking nonsense, you know? And he's really a cool guy and I've just seen it on his face a little bit, like a little bit of kind of like irritation or something, I don't know. But it's something that I'm really trying to work on. Like, you know, so now when I go into therapy, I always remember to pause after I say something and let him talk for a while. And I get a lot more out of the sessions now that I'm doing it.
It's beautiful, Matt. Thank you. Both as there's an art, or both as listeners and speakers, of learning not to be self-centered. Please.
I have a question. With this new age of information, how can you listen to all of these that come at you? And just how... I really sometimes am so overwhelmed that, thank God, I have this tool, meditation, that I can calm myself down.
Nice.
But my surroundings are very loud and crowded and spread and different, and it's just varieties. It's not bad, but it's definitely overwhelming. Or focus on some specific, and I even have problem that.
Well, there's not answering your question directly, but it reminds me that many years ago I read a study. They did a study or test on children, groups of children, with how much noise was in their environment, and so if there was a lot of noise, like a lot of loud noise. Aggressive noise or something versus it was a quiet environment. And they found the more noise there was in the environment, the more aggressive the kids were. And so, you know, we're affected by what our environment and noise ways. So, you know, how do we protect ourselves from all that? One way is to turn some of it off if we can. I mean, that's not always so easy if it's outside our home. But receiving the input that are tremendous inputs, the sensory stimulus that comes into us, to slow it down. Don't have it as quickly, you know. Turn off the TV, turn off the computer, turn off the radio. Have only one on at a time. And then if you learn to meditate, then it's also possible to learn a skill of how to go inside and kind of feel a refuge inside. And not be, the sounds around you don't penetrate as deep, or you can kind of, it's kind of way. And I don't want to say tuning them out because that doesn't sound good, but there's a way of finding a fullness inside that the sounds and stimulus around don't seem to quite touch you. And so there are times I've been in environments where it's really loud and difficult, and it just doesn't seem helpful to just stay open to all the sounds. And I don't exactly pull away from them, but I kind of come into an inner fullness. And then it's like you go into... it's like this wonderful thing of going into... If you ever go in with your car into the car wash, you know, you feel safe and comfortable. But, you know, there's all this sound and activities around you. It's okay. So one more. We can do two more. Why don't you start with you? See the mic.
So I find that if I'm present in my body, that's very important. and that if I'm aware of a strong emotional response, that I cannot listen well. And that if I consciously focus my attention on that person so that I'm not feeling time stressed and I'm really just focused, then it's a lot easier to listen mm-hmm. and hear mm-hmm. and understand.
But if you have a strong emotional response and it's hard to listen, but then if you put all your attention on the person, then you're in some ways there for the person. But what happened to your emotional response? Yeah.
So
we get to put them and bring the mic back if we can.
So what I try to do is to go inside and let that emotional response sort of work its way through my body.
While you're listening.
Well, yeah, that's the problem.
I think this is important. I have a lot of respect for the emotional responses we have. It's all information. It's all part of the bigger picture, what's going on. And to turn away from it in a conversation and focus completely on the other person, maybe occasionally it's useful, but I think that it's part of the overall environment, the overall ecology of what's happening is your response. And I think there's some way of trusting it, even if it's a little bit off in some way, not appropriate, but trusting it enough to listen to it and maybe listen through it or listen with it. Don't act on it if it doesn't seem appropriate, but don't ignore it either. And just as you're listening carefully to someone else, you can simultaneously be listening to yourself. And I find that the best listening I do, the attention is not 100% on the person, but I'm 100% in the present moment. But my attention is somehow hovering back and forth between myself and the person. So kind of 50% to each place. So I'm tracking what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking, and I'm tracking what they say. And so there's opportunity for me to process my feelings. They're an important part of what's happening, but I'm not losing touch with the person either. Anyway, that's what I do. Okay, we'll do two more then.
Yeah, this subject kind of brings to mind a quote I like by a Benedictine monk who said, "The language of God is silence. Everything else is a mistranslation."
So, yes, please.
I'm interested in the subject. I've worked for a long time as an audio engineer, and one of the things I've learned is that our sense of hearing is often tricked by either what we're seeing visually or what our expectations are about a sound before we hear it. And then the other thing I was thinking of was an interview I heard a while ago with John Cage on the radio, and he was talking about how, you know, he had come to use traffic noise and random sorts of sounds in his compositions. And he was talking about, it reminded me so much of what is talked about in mindfulness practice, because he was talking about the importance to him of being aware of really listening to all the sounds around him, because he never knew which ones of those would be useful to him in his compositions, and that he felt it very limiting to just think of music, what we traditionally think of music, as the only element in his compositions.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. And I liked what the gentleman before said about the language of God is silence. But we don't want to limit God to silence only. I think we might miss God or the equivalent, because sometimes God speaks in other ways. So the idea is always, you're always listening for the Dharma. You don't know when the Dharma will come. And I find it very interesting for me to be a Dharma teacher, because I tend to listen or look or try to find out, where is the Dharma in my life, much more than I would if I wasn't a teacher, if I'm going to be teaching this stuff. And so I find myself kind of listening or paying attention, And there's so much dharma that happens all the time if you listen more. So John Cage heard music, was always open for it, and we're open for the dharma. So I hope that this gives you some appreciation of the value of listening. And I'm sure all of you have already understood a lot of this before. This is like more like a reminder. You might devote yourself this week to exploring further than you have, more actively than you have in recent times, this whole thing about listening. And perhaps for this next week, focus more on listening than speaking. Switch the balance and see what you discover. So thank you all.